Yes, I'll start with the first one. And I think intersectionality has a really important place to play in how we tackle and understand racism, and particularly in practice, right? So, you know, the term comes out of legal scholarship, and it really is in practice, how is this law working? And it's not working for black women, particularly in America. But again, just to stress that there are dangers in the way that it can be seen. Like, if we take the starting point that it's a better way to understand that there are differences, sometimes it can make the differences move the focus away from the systemic issue of what racism is. And the real point of intersectionality is to say, well, look, the system, we know the system is fundamentally racist, and how does that play out in different ways? And that doesn't always happen. That doesn't usually happen, I would say, with the way that intersectionality gets used when it becomes in mainstream parlance. It usually gets used to kind of take away, look at other things rather than look at race. Which, so if we, I would definitely suggest an intersectional framework, but make sure it's one that doesn't actually dilute the anti-racist analysis, because that can happen, does happen, in fact. It's probably, I know, it's likely to happen, particularly in a forum like the UN, I would imagine, as well. And I think this has actually been one of the thinking about pushbacks that we've had, right? And then, again, this whole conversation about intersectionality with Kimberly Crenshaw is an idea comes out, and it has the purpose of it that she had with this idea, but then you don't really have that much control about what happens to it, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Kim's been invited to events about intersectionality, and she's appalled at the way it's being used in the event where she's keynoting. So one of the things that we always find, and I find the same thing, is that we have very little control over what happens once we write something and that thing goes out into the world, which is why I always do recommend to colleagues is to be very clear, right? Like, very clear. Like, so I got a lot of criticism when I called my book The Psychosis of Whiteness, and people were like, well, you're just trying to be provoke people. And actually, no, I was just trying to be clear. Like, that's a term you can't really misuse. It is what it is, right? And I think that's one of the reasons I like Malcolm X so much, is because it's so plain and so to the point, it's very difficult to misuse it. So I do think we have to be very, very clear in how we articulate. Even something like Black Studies, when we first started saying Black Studies 2013, that was controversial. People were like, no, we should make it something more palatable, make it multicultural studies. It's like, nah, it's black, like, it's what it is. And at some point, and when you make it very clear, that can have much more of an impact. Even though it also promotes more of a pushback as well. So, I mean, one of the pushbacks I often get is, so I actually had, when I was doing, I did an event for the Psychosis of Whiteness book at the Slavery Museum in Liverpool. And, you know, Liverpool docks had some of the highest volume of slave ships in history came through the docks in Liverpool. And so there's not really a more appropriate place to have this conversation. The book is mostly about how do we misunderstand colonialism, and there's a whole chapter on slavery. But there was a group who came down and protested the book event with this big banner that was probably about as wide as this room that said, White Lives Matter. and on the slavery docks at Liverpool, I don't know, like, you just think this kind of proved the point of the book, right? And so on the one hand, there is this very strong backlash. On that front, I just kind of laugh. It kind of proves the point. It doesn't really have any impact on the work in itself. But I think the more problematic impact is actually when people take up the idea, but take it up in ways that go against the idea. If that makes sense. So we always have to be conscious of that. I would also say one, and that is thinking about what are the limitations of within institutions. So in the UK, and I think in Europe more generally, there is this idea of decolonizing space, decolonizing the university. I always say to people, we are not decolonizing anything. In fact, you can't decolonize the university. The universities are the places that produced the knowledge that said that I am not a human being. And we actually still teach the very same people who produced the knowledge that said I'm not a human being. That the space is, when we say something is fundamentally racist, that's what we mean. It's fundamentally structurally racist. You can't decolonize a university. So what we do instead, and this is where we have had success, is we've colonized the space, right? We're in the university, we have a course, there's a number of us work there, we do different stuff, we manage to leverage resources from the university to do community work, we have close relationships with different organizations, we use the space of the university, has now become like a black space when we're in it. And so we've managed to kind of use the privilege that we have in this space to subvert the meaning of the space. And that's a success, right? And I, this goes back to the presentation where, you know, so much of the successes that we can have, particularly in this area of education, is not in schooling, not relying on formal processes and actually creating our own processes, but you can leverage institutions to get that. And that's the successes that we've had, is we've been able to leverage the resources that come from university and leverage them into community engagement, community resources, community spaces, and in some sense change the university into a community space, at least that part when we're doing things. And that has allowed us to actually be quite impactful, have a quite broad impact on activism, black communities more broadly. And so I would say that's an important lesson, I think, is how do we leverage things out? And again, Malcolm X was a big fan, not a big fan, fans are the wrong word. Malcolm X had lots of faith in the United Nations, right? We take America to the world court. You don't take your crime to the criminal. You take the criminal to court, right? So can we put the black struggle in front of the UN? And this is actually the one area I have to say massively disagree with Malcolm on. Malcolm was way too optimistic about the United Nations. In fact, I'm reading the declarations and seeing that all the countries that say no to the resolutions is UK, France, it's the Western powers, right? This is also a perfect example of how has the UN become an anti-racist space? Of course not, don't be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But within the UN, within particularly General Assembly, within forums like this, they have been able to leverage ideas and support community and support, and that's really the work that we should be doing. And I think that's the message I would push.
Yeah.